What is marketplace SEO? It may not be what you think it is. We learn tips to optimize in the marketplace from Brody Clark today on The Edge. Go!
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. Powered by your digital marketing pioneers, Site Strategics. This week's featured guest is Brody Clark, independent SEO consultant and organic growth advisor at Brody Clark Consulting. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
I'm going to introduce you again to Brody Clark. He's an independent SEO and organic growth consultant based in Melbourne, Australia, with over a decade of experience working in SEO. He's earned a reputation for his transparency, his integrity, and his efficiency when pursuing Google guidelines. He also has a wealth of information about SERP features that he's been studying for well over 4 years and keeping a catalog of the changes on Google. He's received a number of top-cited awards, Top SEO Expert Follow, and was a winner of the SEMrush Search Awards for Australia. He's been a Brighton SEO, SMX Advance, WhiteSpark, Local Search Summit, and many others. And he's got a number of articles on Search Engine Land, Search Engine Journal, and Moz. So if you've not come across Brody, what are you reading? Because he's right there. So go over and check out some of the articles. It's very well-versed. These are not small articles. He's really diving into a lot of great information and great screenshots. So Brody, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You are welcome. You're welcome. And thanks for joining us early in the morning in Australia. Brody, you've cut a new swath here on your own blog. We wanted to jump in there and have a look. This is something that we don't speak regularly of on this show. I'd love to unpack it. It's marketplace SEO. You recently published an article covering this SEO content. It's niche, but it's a very strong tactic. So it's a process of optimizing your product listings to be able to boost organic clicks and obviously produce higher e-commerce conversions. What's the difference between market SEO and e-commerce SEO? Give me that first fork in the road.
Yeah, so I guess the reason why I wanted to write this article, and it's been top of mind for me for actually a decent amount of time now after working with a bunch of different online marketplaces, is that when doing a search for marketplace SEO in Google, basically all of the results that come up for that search don't feel relevant to me. If I was, say, working in-house at a marketplace working on SEO, that I would find it to be particularly useful. And what you mentioned about the difference between e-commerce SEO and marketplace SEO is the biggest distinction there, I think, in that a lot of these articles that have been written about marketplace SEO are effectively just talking about e-commerce.
They really are, yeah. As I was doing research, I was going like, okay, they really don't know that separation, do they?
Yeah, which to me are quite different websites. There are a lot of similarities, and websites in general, you can find a lot of similarities if you pick it apart. But with marketplace SEO, the key part of it is it's appealing to both buyers and sellers, whereas e-commerce websites, a standard e-commerce website, and they can vary a lot, is one that just appeals to buyers in that you're promoting products, you can buy them on the site, whereas the marketplace SEO and how that site functions is you've got two different segments of customers there and different functionality with how the site works, in that the seller are the one who uploads the product or the service and that's presented on the site, which is the marketplace. Then you've got the buyer who is then generally there in higher volume doing a lot of the searches and coming across those pages.
Sure.
But there are similarities in the sense that on an e-commerce website, you've got a product page, which is the equivalent of a listing page. And sometimes they have similar functionality. Sometimes they're quite different.
Some examples of marketplaces. Etsy, right, is a marketplace that we're talking about here. Amazon also is in the same space, correct?
I would say I like to make a distinction among the really big and broad marketplaces like eBay and Amazon.
Right.
In that, when we're talking about marketplace SEO, we're not talking about me being someone who has a product and I want to list it on Amazon or eBay, then do SEO for those products, like do keyword research and that sort of thing.
Right.
That's not what I think of when I'm thinking of marketplace SEO. That's more eBay SEO and Amazon SEO.
Got it.
You're doing SEO for those platforms. But something like Etsy, if you were thinking from the perspective of working in-house at Etsy and trying to scale out the SEO operations of that site, then that would be considered marketplace SEO. And one of the examples that I have on my article is a website called Reverb, which is actually owned by Etsy. It's a marketplace for new and used music gear. So it's just for artists who or people who own music gear to list it on the site.
It's a great domain, by the way.
Sell items.
great domain name.
It's a cool site. And that's a really interesting part about marketplace SEO for me is that you've got all these niche sites that just do such an excellent job of being experts in very specific areas rather than, you know, the bigger, broader websites like Amazon and eBay, which just do sell everything, essentially. Right. From a product perspective,
it's really for those niche but larger sites that can actually hold both communities and have participation for both communities. And that Reverb is a perfect example. Would you have any other examples that you've come across here recently that our listener can track with you on?
Yeah, so the sites that I've worked with over the years, like Airtasker, marketplace for everyday tasks. So in Australia, they're the biggest, and they also operate in the US as well, that if you just want to have an odd job done around your house, say someone to come and just remove some rubbish, some cardboard rubbish, you can create a listing on Airtasker and someone will come out to do it for you. Same with TripAdvisor. That's obviously a big and well-known one for travel and booking. Pets for Homes is an interesting one in the UK that I've worked with. So that's just a marketplace for pets. So buying and selling pets in a ethical way. And
then, just want to make sure you had that asterisk there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's a really important one as well, because, you know, there are marketplaces who are known to do that in a way that aren't ethical. And they do promote things like puppy farms.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Not exactly.
Correct registration of pets, where, you know, that creates a lot of issues and it's really sad as well, obviously.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that pet marketplace, Pet for Homes, it's almost like an adoption process. I mean, they're connecting to families and there's that vetting process as well. So, yeah.
Exactly. And that's an important aspect of the owner of those marketplaces in the vetting process and who they let sell pets on their website, because obviously that contributes to a lot of problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Another one, AutoGuru, who are the biggest auto booking marketplace in Australia. Really, really great website. So those four are sites that I work with. There are some others that I have mentioned in my article that are worthy of mention. One in the US who has popped up in Australia more recently as well, which I think is quite interesting, is a website called Swimply.
It's a
marketplace for renting a private pool at someone's house. So similar to Airbnb, you can list your pool and rent out someone else's pool and go use it for the day.
I'd much rather that than the expenses of actually having a pool. So yeah, absolutely. Sign me up.
And the maintenance of maintaining a pool sounds like a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, it really does. So that's pretty cool. These niche type of environments here, these niche sites that are leveraging these assets. I mean, there's so much granularity here, but you do have to optimize these things and you do have to kind of serve both audiences here. So that's a great series of examples here. You actually give a top 5 points to be able to optimize these marketplaces. First and foremost, and as we discussed it here at the shop, we were not scratching our head, but we had some debate going on here. You actually led with listing pages as point number one. And the contention is you actually lean into no indexing and no following certain types of listing pages on these. And so we're all a flutter over here going, why would you want to not index or not have a no follow on some of these pages? Is it something similar to pagination and the like? Tell us why we wouldn't want to have all of our pages indexed.
It does depend on the marketplace in that the approach that you do use for listing pages. Mm-hmm. Some of them do just use blanket rules of saying we're going to allow indexing of any page on our website that is a listing. And that approach can be fine for the big and reputable sites that have tons of authority and it doesn't really matter what they do with those pages. For smaller marketplaces, in the listing content itself is user generated. So it's the description of the listing, the title, the images, whatever attributes are on there are all created by the customer. When you give a customer full rein to decide what Google sees on your website, when say you're starting out or you're at a place of doing well, but you're not on Amazon or eBay's level, that if you say have thousands of those pages or even millions of those pages, all of that content isn't necessarily going to contribute in a positive way to your Google rankings. And it can bring down other aspects of your site. So say if you're really investing in other content pieces like your category pages that are targeting locations or specific services or products that are bigger pages that apply more broadly and listing content is available on there, then a lot of times it's actually not that good of a tactic to allow indexing of your listing pages. And a good example of this was actually in my article for Swimply. So they've got a listing page that I've got in a screenshot, which is for a pool, which can be rented for a birthday party. And it's based in Baldwin, New York. And if you search for rent a pool for a birthday party anywhere in the US, it ranks in the top few results. And when you're focusing on a very specific area of the US, there's going to be users who are based in Seattle doing that same Google search, trying to find a pool for a birthday party. That's not going to be relevant to them.
Absolutely not.
And that's not going to be useful. So in that instance, a much more effective approach, if they had enough pools categorized as being appropriate for a pool party, in that it should really be a category page appealing to as many small regions as possible and ideally somewhere specific in Seattle with a collection of those listings. So in that sense, that's conflicting with another strategy which they could be doing. So in that situation, they need to, you know, go above and beyond with their category pages. I don't necessarily think that listing pages are always hurting marketplaces. But for some of the smaller ones, I have seen cases of there's just no way that these pages could be contributing in a positive way, especially for marketplaces where they struggle to get high quality UGC, especially reviews. If your marketplace is one that can generate reviews quite easily and customers are happy to leave reviews and detailed reviews, then that can be a good reason to index those listing pages. If you can't produce anything of value on those listing pages, then just having them indexed, either one, just going to be excluded anyway, Google's not going to have them appear, and two, it could contribute in a negative way because Google can see, oh, you've got all this content that isn't useful for users and you're trying to have it indexed and use resources in, on Google's end to surface them. That isn't positive. But the thing is that it doesn't necessarily need to be a case of just no index the listing pages and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative is generally you can use the best parts of that content on the category pages. So it's just a more robust page. So you're still using some of the good areas. So it might be the reviews, the images, some overall attributes from those listings. So you're still technically using that content, just not in the way that it is free-flowing on the site. That makes sense.
We're proud to have Site Strategics as a sponsor of Edge of the Web. We're pioneers in the agile digital marketing methodology. Core specialties that we provide are technical SEO, including Core Web Vitals optimization, search engine marketing, social media marketing and management, focus on conversion rate optimization, truly focused on results-based marketing that works. We've also developed a unique omnichannel media marketing and content curation process that's guided by our weekly R&D. From our Edge of the Web interviews, we incorporate the best techniques for our content broadcast strategy and execution. If you're interested in what we can do for you, just give us a call at 877-SEO-4-WEB or 877-736-4932. Hey, as a sidebar note, we're seeing Google not indexing the full deck of pages that a site has. In fact, it's being more and more choosy on what pages it's actually indexing. So this actually goes kind of right in line with what you're talking about here. It's not the best strategy to have your entire content structure indexed if you have a lot of noisy areas, a lot of areas that don't offer value except for pass-through to other listings or what have you. Are you seeing this as part of that challenge, is that there's a more narrow aperture of what Google's actually allowing to be indexed? That kind of ties into what you're talking about here?
Yeah, definitely. And I dealt with one situation more recently in a specific country where I was working with a marketplace who was targeting the top 200 biggest locations mm-hmm. in that country. And that was working quite well for each of their product variations. It equaled something like, kind of arbitrary, but like 200,000 or 300,000 pages from all those different combinations. And that was working well. What they wanted to do was increase that to 5 million pages by expanding the amount of regions that they were targeting. So just expanding into smaller regions.
Right.
So part of my job for that project was projecting the value in expanding the regions and the risk involved in making it too broad. So having too many pages.
Yeah.
And a decider in that was, did the marketplace have enough listings in each of those smaller regions for specific products to be able to fill up a category? And we came up with some pretty creative ideas to still make that work.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways was expanding the radius slightly in that region. So if there wasn't a specific product for that suburb or small area or town, that we would expand the radius a little bit until there is enough listings to populate that category. So it's still useful results, and maybe someone who is located in that area is open to traveling 25 minutes to a different area to buy this product.
Got it.
So there are ways that you can get around that, but you don't want to push something like that to the extreme, because you might have situations where maybe the radius, even if you make it larger, maybe there isn't enough listings to populate that. And if you then try and get Google to index those pages, they're probably just going to exclude them anyway.
Right.
So you definitely want to avoid those situations where you're creating a page purposefully and Google is deciding not to no index it. And you should take those as clues to changes that need to be made.
No, that's a very good point. So that answers some of the questions here we had in the shop. You also talked about user-generated content being a huge, a very good factor for optimization in the marketplace. It's a big part of the UGC is related to review content as well. So having a review process, and I mean, some of the best marketplaces have such a, I mean, Airbnb is obviously one of the strongest examples, but there's so many places that are just moving reviews through the system, authentic content, non-spam, that should be embraced as part of the methodology, part of the optimization structure, right?
Yeah, and Airbnb, I would say, is another of, they do a lot of things really well from a branding perspective, mm-hmm. but I don't really know what they do from an SEO perspective. Like, I don't know about you, but I rarely see
Airbnb.
Airbnb results showing up on Google.
And all right, so we won't use that as an example.
Yeah, and I think it's probably, it obviously would be a decision that they made in that they are such a big brand and people just go to their website
right
anyway. But for sites that do accumulate reviews on the scale of Airbnb, it is a good opportunity to have that information indexable by Google.
Mm-hmm.
A good example is eBay in that, I'm pretty sure last time I checked, they just use a blanket rule for listing pages in that everything can be indexed. So if a product has a lot of reviews and has a lot of good exposure and a lot of interest, it can surface in all sorts of different features on Google, like in the shopping tab, in the free listings, in the popular product results, in the standard web search results. They have all these opportunities where their products can surface just beyond the standard web page listing.
Sure.
And a lot of that success does come from the content that the user is creating. So the more information that you can collect, especially reviews, is kind of the gold mine for a lot of these sites, because that's the way that you distinguish yourself from a competing platform, is the amount of reviews.
The embrace of the consumer. Absolutely. Maximize your clients' budgets using Wix. Use every dollar towards growth and revenue-driving assets by relying on Wix's enterprise-grade security and reliability. Work more efficiently using Wix's SEO automation and scalable SEO solutions to deliver sustainable results without vulnerabilities, downtime, and workflow inefficiencies for any website of any size. Fix less, grow more with Wix. Go over to edgeofthewebradio.com/Wix today to learn more. You also mentioned a couple other tactics, localized content strategy, the near me concepts, and how you can actually build that structure. And user-generated content also really helps float those sections up as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. The location-based pages, a nice distinguishing factor is the UGC on them, but also the approach that you do use to those pages. Each marketplace I've worked with, they have used a slightly different approach from the last, and some work a lot better than others. And an interesting component to all of this is that for a lot of these marketplaces, one of the top trending terms are near me searches. And what a lot of people don't realize is a lot of users who are searching for those queries are actually looking for marketplaces, not always looking for a physical
brick and mortar
storefront.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which
can be the case for something like if a user in Melbourne is searching for lawyer or attorney near me, then they're probably searching for a law firm who is close in proximity to them. But there is a chance that they could be looking for a more general marketplace of options for lawyers. In the case for marketplaces, the decision generally comes down to targeting the top cities in that country, and then by search volume, if there's a necessity to go deeper than that, you can. But ideally, you want to have as few pages as possible that target as many queries, especially for those near me queries, because things can get really messy.
But do you risk that duplicate content side of things, that it's not nearly original enough that it would bear indexing? I mean, that's also the tough bit. If you have so many localized pieces, it's really got to be so much more authentic or original content in those areas that you cannot have, except for the structure and the headings themselves, you can't have a similar content. It all has to be very unique. Yeah.
Exactly. And that does tie back to the decision of whether you want to index or not index listing pages, because that presents quite a big opportunity for Google to see listing content on these location pages the first time and feel like that is the
fresh
source of that information. So this example in that country I made earlier about how they were trying to expand to different regions, for them, they had a really high volume of listings and a lot of turnover of listings. So they had a lot of fresh content that was regularly being added that they could justify expanding their regions to other areas in a way that was going to work and get traction. If you're a marketplace where you've got less listings but might be higher quality ones, then there's only so much changing of pages you can do for different regions. So that's where it comes back to, you ideally want to have as few pages as possible, but still getting the exposure necessary without going overboard.
Has a lot to do with how you control the visibility of your content and what type of original content is in that space. And on top of the freshness of that, it cannot be stale. You have to keep on having that user participation in the marketplace. And I think that typifies why it's unique, why it's a niche market, is that Google's listening very carefully to that type of lifeblood, which is the reviews and the specialty location content. So you got to be careful that you don't have noise in the way with a heck of a lot of listings that you can craft that message clearly to Google. Would that be a good sum up there?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Very good. All right. Well, dive into that article, folks. We'll have it in the show notes. It's really an interesting space because you don't hear that much about these marketplaces. It's very valuable. So for any of these platforms that are out there that are both buyers and sellers that bring them together, you got to pay attention to those nuances that are and on top of it, you better believe that other competitors aren't really doing it. That's the value of all this, is that not that it's easy, but boy, you can certainly distinguish yourself in the market. Yeah, I said it, marketplace, because there's so many other organizations that may have not even thought about doing this. So fantastic, Brody. I appreciate the article. We're going to send everybody over there. Last thing that I wanted to cover with you, and we talked about it in the show earlier, the first segment, but I did want to kind of strike a chord here. You're participating in the SEO community on social, and you're sharing a lot of information over the years, and you've been able to create that brand for yourself that you are sharing authentic observations. You're not trolling at all. You're not spamming in any way. It's great to be able to see the timeline that you've created and a number of different pieces of information. The SERP's moving so fast that it's a plethora of information that we keep on talking about. But the community itself, what does the SEO community need to thrive? Can you give me a little perspective there? Because you have been there long enough to actually know your way around, and you're engaging with a core number of influencers. What do we need in the SEO community to be able to help expand knowledge?
I think it's an interesting one, and something that I struggle with a bit when I first started sharing information is the scrutiny you can get from articles that you write or things that you share if they're not completely perfect.
Yeah.
In getting that sort of feedback, and often in ways that isn't constructive or feel helpful in the time, can be one that does turn a lot of people off from sharing in the first place.
Yeah.
When I was first starting writing articles, there were a couple that I had written which were mostly well received, but there was the odd comments which just tore them apart, which was difficult to deal with at the time.
Absolutely.
Because you didn't really understand where the person was coming from, and it didn't feel like these people were providing criticism in a way that was meant to be helpful.
Right.
And a lot of times this criticism is given publicly and not privately. I like to be someone who, if I have feedback for something someone has written, is to send it to them directly if I know them, and delivering it in a way that is constructive and ideally does help them to improve. And that's always well received if you do it in the right way. But I think something that is important in the SEO community is that if you do see someone who is starting to write more and contribute their thoughts and expertise, but it isn't perfect, to just be wary about how you give feedback. I think feedback is important, but if it is used in a way that's meant to embarrass someone or
be self-aggrandizing, because if you're doing it in the public, what's the real motivation? It's not really to call specifics on the article. It's basically to create a better, fluff up their own chest and be able to showcase and put a spotlight on themselves as opposed to what the subject matter is, right?
Yeah, I feel like there was a period maybe a few years ago where I feel like a lot of people were sharing information and writing articles and being more active on social. And I feel like more recently that has died down a bit. And I do hear stories from those in the industry that they don't feel comfortable sharing their thoughts on social media, which is, that sucks. I think there have been some steps taken by influential people in the space to push back on that sort of thing in recent times, but it's definitely something that's still there and does prevent people from sharing, which is all part of the ecosystem and what pushes the industry forward.
And that's really the biggest fear for other users to share it, is literally that type of scrutiny. And you're right, is that right now it's been a bit barbed, and there's been scenarios that we should never experience in SEO. SEO is one of those industries that we're all trying to experiment and give each other perspective and insight, because there's no certification in this environment. There's no school of authority. You're constantly learning and you're constantly observing, and you've got to be able to have each other's back and be able to have a bit of a safety net that you can go out there, try to explore, and not just be lambasted in public, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like that's a cultural change which can happen and can progress more in the SEO industry. But it does take, calling that sort of behavior out to stop it from happening. Because then if someone reads an article and they're like, oh, I disagree with this, I feel like this person is coming at it from the wrong perspective, if they know that they post those comments publicly and try to bring someone down, and then if someone sticks up for that person and says this isn't the right way of doing it, if you are in a position to do so, then that might either stop them from doing that, which ideally isn't the best result. The best result would be that they would reach out to them privately and deliver it in a way that is constructive and try to give feedback in a way that is in their best interest. But that's kind of a perfect world though, isn't it?
Absolutely.
We'll see if that happens.
We're happy to have SE Ranking as a continued sponsor of our interview series podcast. One of the most important things for an SEO to focus on is the technical side of SEO. The website audit from SE Ranking provides expert level audits and reports that are clear and concise, even for beginners. Any website can be checked against 130 SEO parameters, including Core Web Vitals, crawling up to 1,000 pages in just 2 minutes. The findings and included how to fix guides can be immediately turned into action items for your team or your clients. And a unique feature found only in SE Ranking is the page changes monitor. This tracks any changes made to important elements of the web pages you or your competitors are optimizing. The website audit is just one of many tools and features worth exploring on SE Ranking. Get your 14-day free trial to try out the most user-friendly SEO platform available and used by over 600,000 people around the world. Visit edgeofthewebradio.com/SE Ranking today to sign up. It takes a lot of courage to be able to lean into this, because you've got this entire data analytics, data scientist mindset inside of SEO, and we don't have to have all the facts nailed down to be able to posit a question or posit a theory, right? You don't have to have everything locked in. And a lot of times you're not going to have all of the data points, but you can certainly see patterns. Why not have that open type of engagement where individuals are not fearing? I mean, that's the thing, is that there's so many thoughts that are not being said, thoughts that are not being brought to the community because of that fear of not retribution, but scrutiny. And, you know, there's this imposter syndrome concept that's bouncing around everywhere. And it's like, you know what? Tackle it, grab a hold of it. We should have a community that embraces fledgling thoughts like that, you know?
Yeah, and it's an important part of learning as well, putting those thoughts down on a page and trying to make a cohesive story of what's going on with a particular situation. I think a good place to start is, if you want to start contributing more, is to at least start with a topic that you know the most about and then try to explore that in as many ways as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you've gotten feedback, ideally, it's off to a positive start at that point. Then know that if you are moving into other areas, there are going to be people who know more about that area than you.
Yep.
So to go into it with an open mind to learning more, and ideally everything that you put out, try to be confident that you've ensured that every area of doubt or criticism could be ruled out from how you address things in whatever you create. I think that's the way that I try to approach content creation, is looking at it from an outsider's perspective. And with that approach, you're ideally producing something that's useful to people anyway. So it doesn't need to be such a serious process of, you know, this is a very scary thing and putting yourself out there like that. It can be in a more gradual way where you're focusing on more areas that you're confident in to get your confidence up, then moving to areas that you're exploring and you're detailing your learning.
Yep, absolutely. Know what you know and move it out there. Pause out some questions and build some trust that you are on this exploration. And hopefully the narrative and the dialogue changes over time. Yeah, we've been a bit punchy here recently. And the SEO community is known for participation, collaboration, and sharing information. We don't want to have that stymied, especially with the new generation of SEOs that are coming into play. Brody, it's been fantastic talking with you today. I really do appreciate the time. We want to make sure our listeners track you down at BrodyClark.com. And on top of that, check out the timeline /notes, because you've been doing an excellent job archiving and showing SERP changes over the years. Any final thoughts for our SEO community, both advanced SEO and actually even new individuals that are coming into the industry? Final thoughts there?
If you haven't written an article yet and published it on your own website, give it a try. You might learn something new.
Very good. Brody, thanks so much for your time today. And we're certainly able to learn a lot from what you're doing and the discipline that you have been practicing out there. Appreciate it. And keep up the good work and keep sharing, because we're all watching what you're screen grabbing and what you're pointing out. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Aaron. Thanks.
More than welcome. More than welcome. All right. You want to make sure you track down Brody at BrodieSEO. You can also track him down on LinkedIn as well. He's always pushing content through there as well. Also, just go over to BrodyClark.com so you can check out everything that he's got over there. And watch him on Twitter, because he's certainly moving a lot of great information in front of the SEO community. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Edge Today over on YouTube and be able to see some of the shorts that we're coming up with out of these interviews. And if you like what you're seeing, maybe you'll jump into the full podcast over at edgeofthewebradio.com. Thanks to our sponsors. Hey, let them know that you heard them on Edge of the Web, because that's why they're there, to be able to meet you and connect with you as potential tools for your digital marketing success. Make sure you check out all the must-see videos over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. If you like what you heard, why don't you go over and rate this podcast.com/edge today. Let us know what you thought about this episode and give us some feedback, because that helps us get in front of listeners who haven't come across us yet. So from all of us over at Edge, stay well, stay safe, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.